Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new time of era. We don't wanna see the hell of us. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. No.
Happy Sunday. Welcome to another Andy Amorell Dollhouse Radio production of Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. Tonight we're going to have a few topics as usual, but first off, let me apologize for last week. I had an issue, again, with my computer, my laptop. But as it turned out, I wasn't knowing if I was being heard or not because being in the studio, everything just went blank, so to speak. I couldn't click on nothing or move anything. But tonight I see the board is lit up, which is an indication that everything is working well. So it seems. But, well, anyway, I figured I might as well disengage if no one is listening. And therefore, I had discontinued the show accidentally. Because actually, I thought maybe I could, how can I put it? I thought I could disengage from the studio and then go back in. But I was locked out, so to speak. Anyway, having said that, tonight we have the same issues that I was going to cover last week. We're going to have those issues this week, which the first issue would be the father issue, and the second one would be the Congressional Black Caucus, and the third one will be colorism, question mark. And the fourth issue would be an essay on nigger and the Becky word. But before we go further, let me also mention that, the song we just heard was entitled Black Renaissance from Kimber. That was Black Renaissance from Kimber, which is the introduction song to Urban Society for those who are just tuning in for the first time. And what I wanted to mention also, apologies again, I have come down with some kind of cold-type situation, some kind of illness. I mean, I'm not coughing exactly right now. But I do have a runny nose, so if my voice seemed to sound nasal, that is the reason why. But anyway, just saying that, me being the way I am, and I'm not retired from the work situation yet. So therefore, concerning work, it's like, give me a reason, I'm taking off. Just saying, case in point, I recall when I wasn't in the position, work position where I am now, which is more administrative than not, whereas before I was working like a janitorial type situation. I didn't mind the work because the work paid well. And really, it was E-A-Z-Y, easy, easy, easy work. All I had to do was just keep busy. And in the workplace, I'm one of those who will keep busy because to just stand still or just sit somewhere for 8 hours, time drags by too slow. So I do things. I do things to help time go primarily, like in life, so at work. But anyway, as I was saying, with that job, it was really like, give me a reason, I'm taking off. Case in point, it was like summertime, like it was like a May or June day. And at that point, I went to work from 3 till 11 p.m. I had the 3 to 11:30 shift more so. And it was like 3 p.m., you know, nice day outside, but I was going to work. Most people, a nice day like that, they say, man, F some work, I'm not going. But me, I got a job to go to, therefore I'm going. Anyway, I was on my way to work, and I came to the highway that I take to get to work, and there was some kind of a situation wherein traffic was stalled there. If I'm not mistaken, some kind of truck had turned over or something. And when I saw that, hey, that was my reason. I turned right around. I made a U-turn, turned right around, and came back home. When I called in, and I told my boss, I'm taking a sick day. We can do that where I work. It's like that. So long you have time to take, you can take that time. So long you don't abuse it. But yes, so right now, because I do in fact have this this cold, this runny nose type situation, and besides that, in the workplace, they had told us long ago. I started there just saying in 2008, I started there, and in our orientation, how can I put it? In our orientation for the job, things they tell you, the do's and don'ts of what to do in the workplace, they had told us there even that if you're sick, don't come to work because you can only make other people sick. I work also in like a hospital-type environment. For a veterans hospital is where I have the good fortune to work. And yeah, they said if you're sick, got a cold, don't come to work, stay home. You got time, take time. Don't bring your germs to the workplace. Exactly. So this is my reason. I shall be off tomorrow. I shall call in sick. Yes, I shall. Anyway, it's possible, too, that I had gotten this cold just as of Saturday because I was around a whole lot of people in like an auditorium-type situation because of this organization that I'm a part of. I was one of the what they call floor monitors. And I was there in that room filled with people, and it was hot in that room, no air conditioning. And I think this may be a factor as to why I have this condition right now because of Saturday. Whatever, that's the way it is, but I'll get over it. I'll just go get some medication tomorrow, and I shall be better. But all I'm saying all that to say, if you hear me sniffling, that is the reason why, because of this runny nose that I'm currently afflicted with. And yes, it is an affliction. It's not a good thing. So anyway, I've already spoken on the issues that I'm going to get into tonight, if I do get there, because you know how I do or how we go. I get into an issue, and sometimes I just dwell within that issue. Anyway, the first issue I'm going to go into, a miscellaneous issue, as I always say, I go into miscellaneous issues first. For those of you tuning in for the first time, I go into miscellaneous issues before we get to the main issue. However, the miscellaneous issues are just as relevant and as important as the main issues. And one of the miscellaneous issues that I'm going to go into will be an update on Prince's demise, the cause, so is now being said. Let me read here what I have here. It says Prince was pronounced dead April 21st, one day before he was to meet with a California doctor about an opioid addiction. Prince died from an accidental self-administered overdose of, I think the word is pronounced, fentanyl or fentanyl. Fentanyl, perhaps. It's spelled F-E-N-T-A-N-Y-L. Fentanyl. I can't pronounce that. But anyway, it says that, like I said, Prince died from accidental self-administered overdose of fentanyl. I'm going to say fentanyl. The Midwest Medical Examiner's office said in a report that was released just last Thursday. So that is the update on the cause of Prince's demise. But again, if that's true, you know, we don't know, but this is what is said, and this is what is going to be the official version of Prince's death. And the article goes further to say that, he was 57 years old also, and it says here that two of his staff members found his lifeless body in Pelsley Park elevator about 9:40 a.m. And it says again here that fentanyl is a synthetic opioid similar to morphine that is administered by injection, lozenge, or patch to treat severe pain after surgery and to manage chronic pain. The controlled substance is commonly sold illegally and misused by addicts. Whether fentanyl had been prescribed to Prince is unclear. The drug is considered highly potent and addictive. And the article goes further to say here that the day before his death, Prince was treated by a local doctor for withdrawal symptoms from opioid addiction. And it goes further to say Prince died less than a week after his private plane made an emergency middle-of-the-night landing in Molina, Illinois, so he could be treated for a suspected opioid overdose following a pair of concert performances in Atlanta. And this goes further to say that, it's talking about the drug again, fentanyl is, it says here, fentanyl is as addictive and more potent than oxycodone and other opioids, said Dr. Annie Palkus, a health partner's addiction medicine specialist who wasn't involved in Prince's death. Misuse often occurs when patients use two or three 72-hour patches instead of one. You know, abusing drugs, terrible. And the article says also here that it's much stronger than morphine, so it's easier to overdose on because it's incredibly potent. We measure it in micrograms, not in milligrams, like other pain relievers. But you know, so that's with the autopsy that was done on Prince. They're now saying that, as I said, yes, it was an overdose due to misuse of drugs. But one thing that I do recall having had read about the suggestion that it had been an overdose of drugs was what some of Prince's reports were reported by some media outlets that some of Prince's closest friends were saying that it couldn't be drugs because they had never seen him, you know, high or even acting as if he was high or even in a stupor, as such drugs will make one, you know, just nod and carry on. Them having said they never seen Prince like that, they were putting forth the speculation that it had to be something other than drugs because in their minds, Prince didn't do drugs. But, you know, I kind of wonder about that also, you know, because, again, we don't know. But just saying, one thing that I remember about someone doing drugs and, someone whom I knew was doing drugs, an opioid even, heroin it was. And I had seen the person, and the person was in a serious stupor, nodding even, you know, every now and then. And I saw the person, and I thought, I guess they must be really tired. And I had basically dismissed the idea that this person would be on drugs and therefore was in a nod type state. I had dismissed the idea primarily because this person had told me years earlier that they loved themselves too much to do drugs. And based upon them having said that, I believed them. And I just had I had believed the person so much that I had dismissed, well, my own intelligence. I had denied my own eyes, my own intelligence, my own surmations, because I hadn't even surmised that this person may have been in a nod, because, like I said, I totally took their word as gospel that they loved themselves too much to do drugs. And how wrong I was, because I found as time went along, hell yeah, that person's on drugs. Can't you tell? Then I said, okay, yes, I can tell. Interesting. So for all I know, Prince's friends could have been in denial about him doing drugs, like I have been in denial about this person, friend of mine. Matter of fact, a family member, she was. Yeah, I was in such denial. Well, I don't know what it was. Anyway, it's now 14 minutes to the hour, and I have overtalked the allotted time. We have to go into our first music break here, which is going to be from Lydia Caesar, her song entitled Lifted. So here we go. Okay, I don't see it working. The board is lit up, but it is not working. So I'm just going to go on and continue with what I was saying. I have to look into this or even speak to the executive producer about this situation here, or maybe, well, I just have to look into it. I'm going to continue and do the show, not like I'm going to continue and do the show unlike I do last week. I'm just going to assume that everyone is hearing me and carry on. So, as I was saying, I had totally disregarded, denied my own eyes, my own intelligence, because, you know, I, believe that person so much. Anyway, so who knows? That could be a situation with Prince's friends also. But now that it's out, that the autopsy has in fact shown or indicated that, per what we were told, well, that's that situation. And moving on from Prince, let him rest in peace. Everyone has heard by now of the passing of Muhammad Ali. He's reputed to be the greatest boxer to have ever lived. I would say perhaps, well, basically in our lifetime. Well, in my lifetime anyway. You know, that's what I would say. But anyway, Muhammad Ali has passed, and rest in peace to him. He did a lot for, how can I put it, he did much while he was here. He gave us much while he was here. He gave a lot of us, many of us, something to look forward to whenever he was to perform in the ring. And he changed a lot of hearts and minds as well. Okay, the song is just coming.
Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit, I'm addicted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Cause you like a hit of the best lift. Boy, you got that ooh, 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 ooh. When I need a fix, you pull out some tricks. And I be like, ooh, 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 ooh. My man, he got the golden glove, the Midas touch. Loving like, ooh, he know I can never get enough. My favorite drug, overdosing on you. Cause men, I want the ordinary love, oh no. I went and found my diamond in the rough, now he's mine. He ain't falling, stand up loving me the way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. Euphoria, I want more, yeah. Baby, take me every higher. Every time you come around, I get so lifted, yeah. Got to admit, I'm addicted, baby. For a sweet lips, the way we kiss, body like ooh, strung out on his fingertips. fingertips. With every grip, I fall deeper into you. Me not want no ordinary love.
Oh no.
I went and found my diamond in the rough.
Now he's mine.
He ain't falling, stand up loving me the way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. Every time you come around, I get so distant.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Got to admit, I'm addicted.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Okay, welcome back to Indy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. You are listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones, and we just heard a song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted. So who knows, throughout the show, whenever I do seek to engage a record to play at the official time, it may come in late as that one just did. And I'll just say I'm glad it did. I mean, you know, because we have to play the music. That's part of the show. So anyway, again, that was Lydia Caesar, her song entitled Lifted. And so let's move right along. And right now I'm talking about Muhammad Ali having had passed. Excuse me. And just saying, I mean, growing up, I was like 14 during the time, well, 13, 14, adolescent during the time he was doing all of his best boxing. And I will say that I consider him a hero. I actually, like many young people and older people, I would guess also, I was one who idolized Muhammad Ali. I idolized and respected him, had such respect for him, naturally, that I had even patterned my style of boxing. I mean, play boxing, we called it then slap boxing, after him. I watched him and learned his style. And even in terms of fighting, I tended to fight as he would box. And not only me, but many people who were around me and who were my age and older. Indeed, yes. But however, I will say that as time had gone along, I mean, after he had fought George Foreman and won, that was a real miracle there. I will say that. Just saying, after I had seen the way George Foreman had burst on the scene and had basically destroyed Joe Frazier and then had destroyed Ken Norton, in my opinion, yes, I used the word destroyed. I was fearful for Muhammad Ali to fight him, because I kind of figured, well, hell, Joe Frazier gave Ali a hell of a time, but Ali did beat Joe Frazier eventually, and Ken Norton even gave Ali, a run for his money. And there was George Foreman just, wow, pulverizing both those guys. So that naturally, I was fearing for Muhammad Ali, and then when he pulled that win out and that victory, oh, happy was me, happy was me. I mean, honestly, that's how I felt. Wow, he got past this monster. That's how I felt. But anyway, as time went along, after that point in time, it was obvious to many that he should be about retiring now. Matter of fact, he even had said that he was going to go on and retire. And I thought, well, good. And he kept talking about, you know, people were saying that, you know, don't you think, you know, you might be kind of old and like your legs might be going and stuff like that. And Ali would say stuff like other boxers had boxed well past the age that he was, and being that he had the prowess and was as good as he was, why shouldn't he? He kind of figured, well, they can do it, so can I. And matter of fact, I had even read his autobiography entitled The Greatest, and he spoke of some guy named Archie Moore, who had boxed well into his, I think, his 40s, mid-40s even. So, I hadn't thought that Ali was going to do that. I thought that Ali would have had, better judgment than to try and imitate Archie Moore and box well into his 40s, which he did do. And what I would say, because of that, You know, I was older then. At that point, I was like 19 or 20 years of age, that is. And I had watched the fight that he had, I believe, with well, some of the fight, because by then, I mean, he in my opinion, he was done boxing, but it's unfortunate that he didn't know he was done boxing. And based upon that, you know, he stopped being my hero. I even stopped idolizing him, and I would just say, well, right now he was good when he was good. He was the greatest when he was the greatest. But right now, you know, he's tarnishing, in my opinion, I always felt that he was tarnishing and all tarnishing his image and also destroying the reputation that he had built for himself. You know, that's what I had always thought. But so, you know, having said all that, I mean, still, for the man, rest in peace. And he was one of the better of boxers. His hands were super quick, super quick, awesomely quick. Indeed. And also, I mean, something other about Muhammad Ali also. He had passed on Friday night. I was driving back from somewhere on the way home, and I had the radio on. And that's when the announcement came on. One of the stations I was listening to had said RIP to Muhammad Ali. I said, oh, my God. You know? And I said, wow. And then the next morning, I turned on the news to see what might be on there about him. And there was much in the media about him. But what initially struck me was how those whom they have doing the news, they're primarily Caucasian. They are. You have very few blacks in the media cycle. I mean, you have Tamron Hall, Joy Reid, and Al Sharpton, and, you know, a few others. But I was struck by, Caucasians saying this and that about Ali. But at the same time, I was remembering that, oh, man, back then, they couldn't stand Muhammad Ali. I mean, I won't say all Caucasians couldn't stand Ali, but the majority couldn't stand Ali. They just felt that he talked too much, primarily because he was black. They were used to those fighters before Ali, just a few years before Ali, such as, who was that, Sugar Ray Robinson, and what's the other guy that he had initially beat to gain the title? I forget his name right now. Matter of fact, I was watching some boxing of Muhammad Ali today on YouTube, some of his fights, just because he passed. You know, I'm doing that homage situation there. But I forget that guy's name, who he had beat. I forget his name. But anyway, they were used to those guys. And people like, let's say Joe Louis also, you know, I mean, guys who were, I won't say soft-spoken, but they didn't speak like Muhammad Ali. I mean, Ali, he had how can I put this here? Ali was one of the first boxers to be really articulate and to articulate more words in a sentence than the former previous boxers. But not only that, but Ali was concerned about what was going on in his world. Because Ali, I mean, early on after the 1960 Olympics, it is said that he, after having won his Olympic bout in wherever they had the Olympics at that time, coming back to America and in his home state and town of Louisville, Kentucky, he had said he had gone into a restaurant, and because he was black, they refused to serve him because he was black. Never mind he had just won, you know, a gold medal for the United States in the Olympics. Never mind all that. He was still a nigger in their minds, and he resented that. And it's even said, per his autobiography, that he threw that gold medal in the river. He was so distraught and angry about that. I mean, what good is it? You know, anyway, that's the way he was. And, you know, he resented that kind of treatment, unlike, how can I put it? Well, I'll just say unlike previous boxers of his era. You know, the other boxers just figure, well, we can't do anything about it. We might as well just accept it. You know, don't make waves. But no, not Ali. He was going to make some waves, and he did. And when he joined the Nation of Islam, and then Malcolm X, yes, began to, you know, tutor him. And they were friends at one point. That is, they were friends before the Nation of Islam broke away from Malcolm X. And because the Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad and his crew broke away from Malcolm X, and being that Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, had become a Muslim, he figured that being that he's in the organization, he may as well stay with the organization. And he eschewed Malcolm. He told Malcolm, well, he didn't really tell Malcolm, you can't be around me, but he said he's going with Elijah. You know, and that was a mistake on his part. I mean, he was radical up to a point, but if he had been seriously radical, he would have went with Malcolm and, allowed Malcolm to partake in a lot of his finances to further the plan that Malcolm X had for black people, primarily in this country. But nevertheless, as I'm saying, Muhammad Ali, he elected to stay with Elijah Muhammad. And also, you know, speak from within the paradigm that Elijah Muhammad was speaking from, about, you know, the white man's the devil and, you know, stuff like that. And because he had that national platform, he was saying stuff like that on, you know, on a national level. And, you know, that didn't make white people happy at all. They thought, who is this Negro? Well, you know what, they didn't say Negro. They just said, who is this N-I-G-G-E-R? You know, talking all this nonsense. So, you know, he got a lot of nerve. We allow him to stay in this country and, you know, all those things. But no, as I'm saying, white folk back then, the media, they did not love Muhammad Ali. No, they didn't. Not like they're acting today. No, they didn't. Not at all. But anyway, having said all that, I had also seen that somewhere on the internet that Bill Clinton is reportedly going to eulogize Muhammad Ali. I'm not knowing how that came about. No doubt it's primarily a political decision, basically, you know, to help his wife Hillary garner more African-American support in her bid for the presidency. But I'm not buying that. No, I'm not. Hell, Bill Clinton was probably one of the main ones who and Hillary who were looking askant at Muhammad Ali back in that day. Why don't he shut up, you know? Oh, he's one of those radicals, one of those Black Panther Negroes. That's what they were thinking about Muhammad Ali. Or if not that, just he's one of those Nation of Islam Negroes. Interesting. Very much so. But so now, you know, now that he's gone, now they can talk about him in the way that they want to. And I've heard today also via the internet that some guy named Piers Morgan, he used to be on CNN. I'm not sure if he's still there, but on occasion I would watch his show primarily because I happened to have been working at that point in time when he'd come on. And being that there was a TV in the area where I was working, you know, just, you know, I wasn't, whatever, I wasn't, you know, real busy. So I would stop and listen to him. I thought he was strange then. But anyway, it turns out that he says some nonsense like Muhammad Ali. Let me see if I can read this correctly here. Okay, I'm just going to read the whole, well, it's like a paragraph here, what I have, that someone has written in reference to Piers Morgan. What he said is that what the writer said concerning Piers Morgan and Muhammad Ali's passing, he said, when the world is mourning the death of a towering, legendary black figure in American history, in world history, what's the appropriate way for a prominent media voice to respond? And this guy says, if you're British click whore Piers Morgan, you compare Muhammad Ali to Donald Trump unfavorably. On the subject of racism, in a grotesque attempt to pimp his grave-robbing column on Ali, Morgan posted a series of tweets asserting that Muhammad Ali was worse than the presumptive Republican presidential nominee when it comes to racist statements. And basically, what they say that this idiot, Piers Morgan, has said was that Muhammad Ali had said more vile things about white people than Donald Trump has said about Muslims, which is totally, how can I put it? Theoretically, in Piers Morgan's mind, I guess he is correct. And not only in his mind, but in the minds of those who think like him. What he said is correct and factual. But realistically speaking, it's as dumb as dirt if dirt can be dumb. But again, that's just how those people like Piers Morgan think in terms of black people. Something similar in the sense that even with the Black Panther Party, those kind of white people would actually compare and feel correct in their comparisons of the Black Panther Party to the Ku Klux Klan. They were saying that the Black Panther Party and the Ku Klux Klan are no different, that they're the same. And to them, they thought that was, number one, an intelligent statement, and then number two, a profound reasoning to reason from that position, which is totally ludicrous. But yet, you got Piers Morgan, a so-called journalist, commentator, talking about that what Muhammad Ali said about white people is just as vile as what Trump said about Muslims. I mean, well, I won't even try to break that nonsense down, but yes, that's where the white mind was on Ali then, and just as it is now. And then again, even more, I think that as time went along, and as Muhammad Ali slowly came out of the boxing arena, and then when he developed that ailment, I guess Parkinson's, whatever they called it. You know, and then it was obviously noticeable. That's when they began to give him more media exposure. I mean, really. When he was mentally functional, they gave him some media exposure, but not as much as that they would give him after he had contracted that illness. I mean, they even had him, you know, hold that that Olympic torch. And he having the Parkinson's and, you know, trembling. Well, some would say shaking, but trembling like that. Those people who never liked Ali, they loved seeing him like that. But for somebody like myself seeing him there, it was awful. It was just terrible. Because like I said, at one point, he was my hero. I idealized Muhammad Ali. And to see him up there like that, I mean, come on. Sadder than sad. To me it was. But to those who never liked him in the first place, oh, they love seeing him like that. I mean, you know, just outrageous. Okay, so moving right along, I now want to go into an article that, wait a minute. We're going to have to go into our next music break. I had overtalked the situation again, but more than likely that's because I was thinking about this issue with the music. Okay, right now we're going to have another song from Milo J. It's called Diamonds, featuring Drake and Future from their CoverGirl mixtape. It's not going to come on right away, but as I'm talking, no doubt it will in fact kick in because I have engaged the song. So we'll see what happens, but in the meantime, I'm going to continue with this article that I have on Donald Trump. And the article is entitled, Donald Trump is Blatantly Racist, and the Media is Too Scared to Call Him Out on It. Now, actually, I have said that before on this show. Months ago, I had said that the media don't call Donald Trump out on his racism. And I wouldn't say it's because they're scared. If anything, they are complicit with his racism. And his racist attitude, both the same thing. So, here we go. Milo J, Diamond, featuring Drake, and Future from the CoverGirl mixtape. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Phone's blowing up right now, but I ain't tryna talk, I'm tryna feel the fire. All my bitches fucked up right now, but got the jewelry on me, now I'm tryna keep it tight. Now my nigga, he been tripping on me all week. Now I'm tryna get my mind off the shit, and you know what I need. Yeah, and I don't give a damn who sees you tryna be. Slipping on, don't bury on for no reason. Popping tags up a echelon for no reason. Seen this bad little Jones, she was perfect. I let her push the phone right now if she worth it. Falling in the middle of the club, no jersey. He don't want no liquor cause he been drinking that dirty. Bring the eights by the case, my bitches with me. Bring some ice for my cup, my drink with me.
And you know what I need from you when I get home. You better not be on the phone talking up a storm like you usually do. Talking to your friends like you usually do. Telling them I never spend time with you. It's hard to find the time we've been
slipping on, don't bury on for no reason. Popping tags up a echelon for no reason. Seen this bad little Jones, she was perfect. I let her push the floor right now if she worth it. Falling in the middle of the club, no jersey. Bring the ace by the case, my bitches with me. Bring some ice for my cup, my drink with me. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing.
I'm familiar with this cash flow. And if you took it, you can vouch for me. I did it my way, you can vouch for me. I put the cocaine and the powder in the couch on me. Whenever I step outside the house, I get the Glocky on me. Bad bitches wanna come by the paparazzi on me. I got so many bad bitches that I barely wanna. I'm barely paying attention, baby, I need substance. I know you spent some time putting on your makeup and your outfit, but
welcome back to India Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. Okay, I had said before we had left, but before I even go into that, let me back up and say the song we just heard was from Myla J. entitled Diamonds featuring Drake and Future from the CoverGirl mixtape. Now, what I was going to say and then realized I had to say the song, give you the name of the song and the person who made the song, was that I was going to go into the Donald Trump being racist. But before I do that, I want to also put out something that's related to the Donald Trump being racist, as well as this Piers Morgan guy, in reference to their mindset. I guess I could say intellect, but I say it was disdain. to say somebody like those people have intellects. But anyway, I have recently read, I'll read what I wrote here. I wrote this here. Recently I read someone pointing out slavery and or racism wasn't about hatred of blacks / Africans per se. It was more about understanding the nature of Africans / blacks in a economic context. And in having said that, to somewhat extend it, what I had gotten from that was this person is saying that racism, in a real sense, from their mind, from their perspective, which I somewhat don't agree with, from their perspective, is that racism wasn't about hatred of black people, but it was more so about a justification for slavery. And, let me just say it like that, because that's where it gets kind of convoluted, and we can see the inanity of what this person is saying. I'm sorry to say that, but I have to say that. Yes, but I'm saying, this person is in essence saying that racism wasn't necessarily about hatred for black people, but was more so brought forth to justify the enslavement of African people. But I would take issue with that by asking the question, if whites didn't have hatred of blacks, how and why could they enslave them and then also, you know, deny them their humanity, deny them all of the amenities, if you will, of the human condition or the human experiment? Why take all that away if some hatred is not there? But no, but this person says that it was more so about a justification, not hatred per se, but just justification for the treatment of African people. I found that interesting. I just wanted to have put that out to kind of go also into the mindset of someone like a Piers Morgan and or Donald Trump. They can actually say that number one, they're not racist, and then number two, therefore they don't hate black people. But at the same time, they have that mindset that black people are somehow different and also aren't as deserving as they are. And then further, when black people do complain about racism, people like that will call us whiners, that we're complaining about nothing, that we are pulling the race card as if, you know, that's some kind of phantom. You know, in other words, all the shit that's taking, all that we feel is taking place with us is primarily taking place in our heads and has no objective validity. People like that, I mean, really, really. I was glad that I had come across someone saying something like that in 2016. Because as is said, it's an adage by now, the more things change, the more they remain the same. So I wanted to put that out there for those who might not have known this mindset that still persists now as it did in 17 or 16, 19. Outrageous. But, yo, we live today. I'm living today. Anyway, going into the article about Donald Trump is blatantly racist and the media is too scared to call him out on it. This is in reference to this judge that Donald Trump was recently talking about in the media. This guy, this judge who is overseeing his Trump University scandal or situation. Anyway, Trump talked about him being a Mexican and how he is therefore unqualified to sit in judgment on a case about him. And why does Trump feel that? It's because Trump feels, number one, he's Mexican, and number two, because this guy knows that he, Trump, plans to build a wall to keep Mexicans out of America, and number two, to deport as many Mexicans as he can. So therefore, Trump is saying that this guy has a conflict of interest. Outrageous. And because he's Mexican, as if, you know, he himself, Trump, has nothing to do with this. As if he, per the lawsuit that's leveled against him, is a smokescreen. Has nothing to do with him. It's bogus. He didn't. He feels that he didn't defraud no one. Outrageous. So I'm not even going to read this whole article because it's not necessary. I basically gave the gist of what this article is saying and why it's saying what it's saying. And plus, I had already said long ago that that the media is in fact complicit with Donald Trump, because the media, in a real sense, our media institutionally is as racist as Donald Trump. If it weren't so, they wouldn't have Donald Trump on there every day, all day, and regardless of what he says and or don't say and or what somebody said about him. Come on, give us a break, honestly. And also something else here too, concerning that kind of mindset. I happen to have gotten this off the internet as well. Someone had posted this on my Facebook page, and it was in reference to the the movie that was shown last week on Memorial Day called Roots, a new rendition of it. I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it because I have difficulty watching those those slave movies about slavery. If they were showing them rebelling, I mean, every day, although granted, I know rebellion didn't take place every day, but still, that's what I want to see. I mean, even if it's one or two, well, back up, even if it's just one, show him, show her rebelling, escaping, show him. And then again, not just once, but keep showing us that. Don't just show us those who submitted to that. Don't just show us those who submitted to being beat with a whip. Surely a lot were, but then again, a lot weren't. And then again, a lot died because they refused to be beat, because they considered themselves, well, a human being, and they refused to be beat down by another human being, regardless of what society had dictated that they were or were not. So, and having said that, I will further say that I'm in complete agreement with what Snoop Dogg was saying. Granted, I didn't watch the video because I can't take all that cursing that be coming out of his mouth unnecessarily. But anyway, I didn't watch the video of him saying all that, but I did read what was said about what he said, and I like what he has said. I'm one who can get with what he has said. Enough of those slave movies. But primarily, I would say that primarily because having read some history on slavery, I mean, the stuff that I had seen that they put on the screen is whitewashed. It's cleaned up exponentially. It is cleaned up exponentially. Just, it's awful. Matter of fact, even having read the book Roots, the actual novel Roots by Alex Haley, and then having seen what they put on TV, oh, man, it was the book and the movie were so different. So different. I mean, you know how in writing they describe things in detail and or to a T, and then to see what they put on the screen, I couldn't believe that nonsense. Case in point, at a certain point, John Amos played the part of Kunta Kinte as an adult. The character Kunta Kinte was John Amos, and I forget who the black one was, unfortunately. But even the black slave girl Kizzy, Leslie Uggams, I remember her name. Yes, that's who she was. But anyway, they had shown them, you know, living as a family in a house, and when I saw what they had curtains on the window. I mean, honestly, in the slave hut, they had curtains on the window. Come on, come on. Back then, based on what I read, we didn't even have mattresses. We didn't even sleep on beds. Well, it's true. If you don't know it, read some history. Read some black history. Read some history about what went on during slavery. We didn't have no curtains or no MFing windows. We didn't even have a bed. We barely had an MFing pallet. We barely had even blankets. They didn't give us no blankets. We slept on dirt floors. Floor? Did I just say floor? We slept on in the dirt, basically. Granted, you had those who lived in the house, and I don't know how they slept. I guess they might have slept in the basement also, or like Malcolm said, up in the attic, and they probably gave them a pallet to lay on. But the majority, no. Well, nothing like that. And it's awful. And then again, to see what Hollywood does to that, you know, to make it look picturesque, to make it look not so bad. Oh, it was bad. Y'all don't know who haven't read no history. Take my word for it. It was bad. It was awful. How we came through that, I mean, determination. That's all I can say. Because life is life. We're going to live. I mean, anybody, not just us, but anybody who wants to live will live, because that's just the way it is. We go on until we expire, basically, regardless of how rough, tough, wrong, or despicable, whatever it is, we're going to go through it if we have it within us to go through it. And I'll put it this way, more of us, not just black people I'm talking about, but more of us humans have what it takes to go through whatever than those of us who don't. True, there are some of us, like I said, who don't have what it takes to go through whatever, however. And then again, things shouldn't be the way things are to put anybody in such dire straits anyway. But some people put in those dire straits, they come through. We come through. Interesting. But anyway, I had digressed here. But anyway, still concerning, the mindset of a Donald Trump and a Piers Morgan and those who think like them, and no doubt most of those in control of media institutions, their mindset is also like this. This article here says here that some white nationalist racist, that is, white nationalist is a white racist, basically. Excuse me. It says some white nationalist groups are not happy at the reboot of the classic television series Roots, which recently aired on the History Channel. It says here, Brian Blanc, that's spelled B-L-A-N-C, spokesperson for the National White Alliance, said, and check that out, it's called NWA also, National White Alliance, not niggas with an attitude, said he was concerned that the miniseries portrayed white slave owners in a bad light. Imagine that. He's upset because the miniseries of Roots, this one, portrayed white slave owners in a bad light. Outrageous. But still, somebody can think like that. Anyway, it goes further to say, just because they profited off the labor of indentured laborers, raped enslaved women, and sold off their mixed-race offspring, it doesn't mean they were bad people, said Blanc in a radio interview on some radio station. At least the plantation owners gave the slaves free room and board and introduced them to Christianity. Blanc comments echoed a statement made by Scott Terry at the 2013 Conservative Political Action Conference during a seminar about how to encourage diversity in the GOP, that is the GOP, the Republican Party, the grand old party. Terry said that slaves should have been glad to receive free room and board from their masters. Outrageous. And then it goes further to say that William Guillen, a columnist for right-wing conspiracy sites, was also concerned about the new version of Roots. In the new interpretation of the novel, they removed any remaining positive roles by white Americans and released it on Memorial Day in the run-up to the election to agitate black voters into voting for Democrats and or for violence if needed, he said. You know, I understand people like that, who think like that, somewhat better than I did. And basically what I understand is that they're living a different reality. I mean, their reality, to them, perception is reality. What they perceive as reality is reality, just that. I mean, superficially speaking, they see the superficial result of something and say, oh, well, the cause of this or that is because of that. And it's just outright outrageous. All right, moving along from that. I also want to go into, I want to mention also that George Zimmerman, we heard about him wanting to sell that gun that he killed Trayvon Martin with. And it's a rather lengthy article, but the only thing I want to read from that article is something he had said, and it's in quotes that he said this. I guess it must have been in response to someone asking him why would he want to sell that gun. And he replied, "I'm a free American. I can do what I like with my possessions." That's what he said. But yet Trayvon Martin, living in America, he was a free American. But to George Zimmerman, he didn't have the right to be where he was. Outrageous. I won't go further into that because I'm trying to move on and get to the articles. Not the articles per se, but the issue that I wanted to, one of the main issues, which is going to be the Black Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus. I have some other articles that I guess I'll get into next week, but let me go on into that. But before I do that, it was a child custody issue I wanted to have brought up also concerning black fathers. But to speak on that rather quickly and passing right along out of that, you know, like I said before, 2 weeks back or 3 weeks back, you know, my attitude about these custody battles between, I'll say, black women, their children, and the father of that child. But basically, I think in terms not of the father. Well, yes, he is the father of the child, but I'm thinking in terms of one who is only a father in name. I mean, one who doesn't do anything for that child, but yet somehow only wants to parade that child as it being his child. And that's if he does do that for that reason. You know, right now I'm thinking that that no, such a person with that kind of mindset ought not have any custodial rights for that child. Like I said, in my opinion, at this point in time, I'm thinking that a guy like that, he's a father only in name, and then to somewhat extend what I'm saying there, I'll go back to something I've said previously on the show concerning words. And I stumbled upon this some time ago, that it is a possibility. Well, no, first off, I'll say it as I think it, and that is, I do believe that words do have meaning. I believe that. And conversely, I also believe that some words only have meaning if we apply meaning to that word. I also believe that. So in other words, some words don't mean anything unless we give those words meaning. Now, concerning the word father, I could even say mother as well, because both are complicit in this depending upon their mindset. That's the way I'm seeing this now. Well, yes, I'll say it like that. That's the way I'm seeing this now, because as I'm saying, some fathers, some men, guys that I know who are fathers of children, what I see or have come to see is that really they don't do nothing for that child. I mean, even in terms of, let us say, that they do have some kind of parental rights toward that child. The only thing that they want to do, well, the only thing that they can do, the type of custody that they have, it may only be visitation. But like even there, what I now see is a father goes to the mother's house to pick the child up, and from the mother gets the child, and the mother gives that person milk, Pampers, clothing, and whatever else that child needs for the time that it's going to be with that guy. The mother does this because the guy don't have a damn thing and don't plan to give a damn thing for the child. Because to that kind of person, in his mindset, hell, She's supposed to have these things. She's supposed to have these things for the child. Not him. Well, not me. That's how that kind of person thinks. And, you know, now, like I said, I'm starting to see this. And, you know, I'm talking like this because me, myself, personally, I couldn't be someone like that. That kind of mindset had always been foreign to me, alien to me. I had known that like that. And then now that I know it, oh, no, no. A guy like that don't deserve nothing. I mean, I even think this way, too. All right, granted, it could be a situation. I mean, because the situation, there are a lot of nuances in these kind of situations because they come about because of individuals. And all individuals have their idiosyncrasies and things of that nature. But having said that, if it should be now just one situation, if it should be a situation wherein both parents don't get along at all, and it's obvious that the father of the child knows that the woman, well, the mother of the child, don't want him in his or her life. In my thinking, well, I'll put myself in that situation. If I were in that kind of situation, and I had a presence of mind, as I do, I would feel, okay, well, that's the way it is. I have to understand that because there's nothing between her and I. But what I would also do is I would hope to, you know, keep contact, not physical, but let us just say, for lack of a better word or term, I would want to keep visual contact with my child and therefore the mother, because the mother would be with her, but more so I would want to keep visual contact with the mother of my child, and therefore my child as well. And at a certain point, as the child is growing up, and if I thought, well, now's the time for me to introduce myself to my child. Maybe she might be 8, 9, or 10, you know, at an age wherein I think that she might can understand, or he might can understand. At that point, I would seek to introduce myself to that child, telling him or her, look, I'm your father, your mother and I didn't get along, we don't get along. And I know you don't know me, and I don't know what she's told you about me, but I want you to know that, you know, whenever, whatever, I'm here for you, whatever you might need, I'm here. And if I can't provide it, I will do that. But concerning, you know, beating my head up against a brick wall, trying to, you know, get custody or visitation rights with somebody I don't like, no. I'm going to just fall back and, you know, and well, also, I guess I would also, well, she might be the type also who don't want nothing from me, because some women are like that. The guy, because whatever, they want nothing from him at all, not even Pampers, not even money for milk. So if that's the case, oh, well, again, fall back. And then as time goes along, you know, keep visual contact with them both. And then at that point in time, you know, step forward. Because at that point in time, you know, the child, him or herself, would be able to make decisions. Because even the courts see it that way. Because the courts, you know, from what I've read, the courts in these kind of situations, they call them custody battles. In these kind of situations, the court supposedly makes its ruling to give some guy whom I just described custody of the child, visitation rights of the child. Primarily under the supposition that it's in the best interest of the child. But you know what? Just saying, I can understand that on a certain level. The level in which I can understand the court thinking that it, well, the father being in the child's life is in the best interest of the child, is that the court has an idealized concept or perspective of what a father is and or should be. And unfortunately, that idealized concept or whatever is not realistic, because therefore they just don't understand. They understand something from their own perspective, but it's not pertinent to the reality of that woman's and that child's situation, nor the father's situation, especially if he's some kind of guy who don't want to do nothing for the child, but just see him or her take her on the weekend. And like I said, the mother provides everything. Pampers, milk, clothing, pacifier, all that. And he feels that, well, it's her job to do that. She's the mother. I'm the father. I can take my child when I want to. To that, I say no, 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 no. And therefore, I would say that the courts, they ought to rethink their notion or their concept of the best interest of the child. I really do think they ought to rethink that position. Definitely so. Now, I want to also read something into the show, being that I was just talking about fathers. And this I had gotten from a Facebook friend's timeline, Dr. Stacy Patton. I mentioned her before on the show. She's one who is a child advocate. She advocates for children in dire situations. And also she's one who does not believe in beating a child to correct that child. She's one who more so believes, as I believe, that, you know, children should be talked to. And I think a prime thing that could bring that about, that that mentality that a child should be talked to as opposed to hit, spanked, or whatever, is for us to remember that we were children once too. And in remembering that, we should remember how it was when we came up. But granted, I am aware that some adults remember themselves growing up and remember being beat, spanked, or whatever, and those kind of people think that it was in their best interest. And those kind of people feel that, well, if I wasn't beat, spanked, slapped, punched, I wouldn't be the person I am today. Well, I'm not talking about that kind of person. And having said I'm not talking about that kind of person, this that I'm going to read now, this is the kind of person that I'm talking about who has the idea of talking to their child as opposed to getting violent with their child. Like I said, this I got from Dr. Stacy Patton's wall. I mean, you know, she writes something on there, then a lot of us comment upon what she's written. And what I wrote here is that the following words were written in response to Dr. Stacy Patton's lecture I had posted earlier in two parts. This man, George Estrella, is in complete agreement with Dr. Patton. What he writes corroborates Dr. Patton's words and thus her mindset. What he wrote was this. He said, "Sister, I have a child. In your talk, you perfectly articulated every thought I have had since my son's birth 8 years ago regarding corporal punishment, along with a few ideas which I had failed to make connections to. I was one that believed discipline done with love and clarity and without anger was a tool to be used, albeit sparingly, to teach proper behavior. I remember holding my son, tears in his eyes, telling him I love him and explaining to him why the spanking I gave him was necessary. I can now only imagine how confused he must have been, how incongruous my actions and my words must have been to him. When my son turned 2, he grabbed me by the hand, took me to the bedroom, and sat me down on my bed. He began pacing nervously, wringing his little hands until he finally got the nerve to tell me he had something to say. I was floored by the level of maturity he showed when he began to present his position. He asked me if I loved him. He asked if we were friends. He asked if we were really friends. He asked if friends should hit each other. He then asked if I love him and we were really friends, and since friends shouldn't hit each other, why I spank him. He stood there, all 3 feet and 35 pounds of him, and faced down what must have appeared to him a giant. I realized that he just showed me the way to liberation, and I silently vowed that I would never teach my son to kneel, but to stand strong and with conviction against injustice wherever he perceives it. With tears in my eyes, I promised him that I would never spank him again." And he wrote in the end there, "Stay strong and keep doing what you're doing." You see? Talk to his child. Well, no. His child talked to him. 3 years old. And that's the thing. We think they don't know. We ought to remember, we knew. For real. They know, we knew. Children. I mean, oh my God. No. No. I'm in complete agreement with Dr. Patton. No. Don't hit your child. Talk to your child. And you know, that's a reference to, you know, that father situation. Now this guy, you can tell, is a good father and hopes to be a better father and is taking care of his child. No doubt. But just saying, when I had first read his words, you know, names, sometimes males have female names, sometimes females have males' names. But just because, reading what he wrote, I had just assumed that he was a woman. And I replied back to him, referring to him as, you know, in the woman, I guess, wordage, pronoun or whatever. And he wrote back, you know, sorry, but I'm a man. Well, interesting. Anyway, it's now 15 minutes to the hour. And, well, we're just going to go on into our music break here. And we're going to hear a song from Myla J. It's called Don't. So here we go. And as we know right now, it takes some time, some seconds before the song to actually engage, although I have pressed the button to engage it. So therefore, I'm going to go on into some of the Congressional Black Caucus. I probably won't get all the way through it, but there's always next week. And, you know, of course, we got to get there. There are so many things happening. And, so here we go.
Don't play with it. Don't be dishonest. Still not understanding this logic. Hey, I'm back and I'm better. I want you bad as ever. Don't let me just let up. I wanna give you better. Baby, it's whatever. Somebody gotta step up. Gonna let somebody saw next up. Be damn if I let them catch up. It's easy to see that you're fed up. I am on a whole nother level. Girl, he only fought you over cause you let him. Fuck him, girl, I guess he didn't know any better. Girl, that man didn't show any effort. Do all I can just to show you you're special. Certain it's your love that holds me together. Lately, you say he been killing the vibe. Gotta be sick of this guy. Pull up skirt, get in the right. Left hand is steering, the other is gripping your thigh. Light up a spliff and get high. Shawty, you deserve what you've been missing. Looking at you, I'm thinking he must be tripping. Play this song for him, girl, just listen.
You just kept on playing games, and your love wasn't the same. And I don't know what to say, but what a shame. Another nigga had to come and save the day. Clock in, Superman, okay. The only one that got me feeling this way. And I think so far, baby, no propane. Yeah, got that good, he be doing his thing. I'ma keep it 100, man, ain't no shame. The way he put it down, he deserve everything. Oh, baby, I swear, he holds it down. Yeah, he holds it now. So down.
Welcome back to India Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just left the issue, fathers. Yes, fathers. Interesting. Okay. So now I'm going to start, anyway, the issue of the Congressional Black Caucus. I've had this article here for the longest. But anyway, it is, in fact, up on the Internet, so it can be pulled up or down anytime, you know. So anyway, this is what I have here about the CBC. That's the abbreviation or the acronym for Congressional Black Caucus. For the longest, I've always wondered, you know, is it really relevant? I'll say that firstly. Anyway, this article here is talking about the Congressional Black Caucus, and it's entitled, just a second, it's entitled, Is Black Caucus a Fundraising Powerhouse? And it goes, the article starts off saying, when the Congressional Black Caucus, let me see here, okay, when the Congressional Black Caucus wanted to pay off the mortgage on this foundation's stately 1930s red brick headquarters on Embassy Row, it turned to a familiar roster of friends, corporate backers like Walmart, AT&T, General Motors, Coca-Cola, and Altria, the nation's largest tobacco company. And I guess some wonder how and why the Congressional Black Caucus did and does support Hillary Clinton. Anyway, the article goes further to say, most political groups in Washington would have been barred by law from accepting that kind of direct aid from corporations. But by taking advantage of political finance laws, the caucus has built a fundraising juggernaut unlike anything else in town. It has a traditional political fundraising arm subject to federal laws, federal rules, but it also has a network of nonprofit groups and charities that allow it to collect unlimited amounts of money from corporations and labor unions. That there sounds kind of iffy, but that is what said is going on with the Congressional Black Caucus. And the article goes further to say, the caucus says its nonprofit groups are intended to help disadvantaged African Americans by providing scholarships and internships to students, researching policy, and holding seminars on topics like healthy living. Is that the best they can do, really, healthy living? But anyway, I tell you, I never did trust them. But anyway, it goes further. The article also says that, but the bulk of the money has been spent on elaborate conventions that have become a high point of the Washington social season. In 2008, the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation spent more on the caterer for its signature legislative dinner and conference, nearly $700,000 for an event one organizer called Hollywood on the Potomac. And it says they spent more money there than it gave out in scholarships, federal tax records show. At the galas, lobbyists and executives who give to caucus charities get to mingle with lawmakers. They also get seats on committees the caucus has set up to help members of Congress decide what positions to take on the issues of the day. Even as it has used its status as a civil rights organization to become a fundraising power in Washington, the caucus has had to fend off criticism of ties to companies whose business is seen by some as detrimental to its black constituents. So that there is indicative that there are some in the CBC, some blacks in the Congressional Black Caucus, who are in disagreement with what is being done in the Congressional Black Caucus and further with the monies that the Congressional Black Caucus does garner. Some are there who disagree with that, but it seems like, I guess, the majority rules. Outrageous. But anyway, you know, just saying, and having read this article, I'm telling myself that I'm going to have to, well, not I don't have to, but like I will reread the Stokely Carmichael and Hamilton book entitled Black Power, the book that was really popular in the mid-60s on through the 70s, and I guess in the 80s it began to play out. In the 90s, I guess nobody never even heard of it. In the 2016, it may not even be on the bookshelves anymore. But anyway, I'm telling myself that I want to do myself the mental favor of rereading that book in this day and time. Anyway, the article goes further to say, as I had just read there about how some are in disagreement, it says here that The caucus has had to fend off criticism of its ties to companies whose business is seen by some as detrimental to its black constituents. These include cigarette companies, internet poker operators, beer brewers, and rent-to-own industry, which has become a particular focus for consumer advocates for its practice of charging high monthly fees for appliances, televisions, and computers. Caucus leaders said the giving had not influenced them. That's what caucus leaders said, that these people who give these things has no influence on them. Yeah, right. Interesting. And they have a quote from this person named Barbara Lee. She says, "We're unbossed and unbought," said Representative Barbara Lee, Democrat of California and chairwoman of the caucus. "Historically, we've been known as the conscience of the Congress, and we're the ones bringing up issues that often go unnoticed or just aren't on the table." Now, just saying, I've heard that term mentioned before about the CBC, and at that time, I was a person who bought into that. You know, because at that time, let's say the mid-70s, early 80s, mid-80s, you know, it did seem like that was why they were there, to be the conscience of the Congress, being that they too are African-American. They would more so know the plight. Well, they do know the plight of African-Americans, and also they have some insight as to what should be done to remedy the situations that African-American communities are hampered by or hindered by, both those words. Excuse me. And so they said that we're the ones bringing up issues that often go unnoticed or just aren't on the table. Okay. And the article goes further to say that the claim that this is a truly philanthropic motive is bogus. It's beyond credulity, said Meredith McGee, policy director at the Campaign Legal Center in Washington, a nonpartisan group that monitors campaign finance and ethic issues. Members of Congress should not be allowed to have these links. They provide another pocket, and a very deep pocket, for special interest money that is intended to benefit and influence office holders. Now, having said that about, you know, read something there about the Ethics Committee, I recall a few years back, not long ago, I mean, a few members of the Congressional Black Caucus were being investigated, or they were brought up on charges of having violated rules of ethics. And they were well known. Well, one was Congresswoman Maxine Waters. You know, she was, they were investigating her for unethical dealings, as well as Charlie Rangel of New York, also for unethical dealings. And initially, I thought it was just, you know, just some witch hunting, you know. But now, I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to have to break off here. We're going to continue this issue next week, as well as other issues I didn't get to, because time is running out. So I'm going to say I'm glad that you all had listened, and I hope you all will listen more next week. So in the meantime, I'm going to try to go out with a song from Myla J again, entitled Friends, from the CoverGirl mixtape. Well, I've engaged it. Let us see what happens. But in the meantime, I'm going to continue to speak as I had. And also, I'm just saying, I'm going to leave the Congressional Black Caucus until the song comes on, but I want to also mention that I wanted to go into an article about Dylan Roof, that guy who killed those 9 black people in that church in Charleston, South Carolina. It turns out that the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, is, they want to give him the death penalty. And some guy named Ta-Nehisi Coates, he's a well-known writer. Some people put him on the level of James Baldwin, but I don't know about that. But he has an article that where he's saying that basically he's saying, I guess, that he's in disagreement with the death penalty. And then number two, that Dylan Roof shouldn't get the death penalty. I disagree with that. I mean, but no, somebody like him, I can't agree that he should die slow. His death penalty would be too quick, but somebody like him, I say he should die slow. I guess we're going to sign off now, because time is running right on out. And the music may not come on, or if it does come on, the music will play out the show. But again, until then, I'm going to say everybody have a good night, and it was good talking with everybody. So, till next week, Urban Society signing off. Good night.